with you. It's tough for me to sit here and not grab a guitar and be a part of that.
I know. It's
really sound great today. If you notice that we weren't singing, that's actually intentional.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to stay in with us today. So that's
you're welcome.
Yes, you are welcome. Let's jump to the keys to the game here as we talk about our teachers today, our participants for the game day teach-off. Of course, you all know Kurt Walters, who's been here for the entire duration of the lifespan of Crosspoint. And our special guest today is Lisa Pay. I'm going to cover the keys to the game for Lisa. One thing to note, she is a rookie. She is an all-pro, but she's new to Crosspoint. So she's playing hurt today. A little bit of a sinus, sore throat thing going on there. So we appreciate her time. Just want to state that up front. She is a professor of social work at Anderson University. Comes with 12 years of experience teaching human sexuality at the collegiate level. She's a fan favorite among the university crowd there in Anderson. Professor Fay is a licensed therapist and a coordinator of recovery groups around the greater Indianapolis area, and would also like to point out to her, just kind of say thank you up front. I've been around the NFL for 10 years, around athletics for a long time, and there's kind of this unwritten tradition of rookies being indebted to veterans. So thank you in advance for the launch at Houlihan's, the unofficial Crosspoint restaurant, upcoming after the service today.
Yeah. And that's dessert, too. Just throwing that out there. She is really qualified. I mean, she is really good. I don't even know if Kurt should show up. You know what I'm saying? But we have to play the game. So the keys to the game for Kurt Walters wearing the Patriots jersey today, Kurt Pastor here at Crosspoint.
The friend card.
Yeah. One of the keys for Kurt today is he's going to have to block out the distractions. It's not only been a trying few weeks for Kurt, but really a trying season. Really, when you look at it, there's been the whole neck injury thing going on. And is he going to play? Is he not going to play? The doctors just cleared him to play, but then the church is going, no, you can't play, kind of thing. So that's been crazy. It's been a trying season for this Tennessee grad. Second point here, pocket protection. Dealing with all that stuff that Irsay's been tweeting about him. Have you been seeing stuff that he's been tweeting about him?
If I
politician?
Could impose for just a second. Are you taking statements about Peyton Manning and substituting Kurt's name?
Possibly.
Did you not do your homework?
Maybe not.
What can you actually tell us about Kurt?
Hold on a second.
I apologize.
He doesn't have a brother named Eli by any chance, because I got a lot of stuff on that.
I think it's Mark.
Okay.
We'll have to check on that.
He's got great hair. Look at the guy. He's got an awesome head of hair. So, yeah, that's what I got. Back to you,
when
Chris.
When we talk through this, doing this, you were going to wear a jacket. You were going to do your homework.
Yeah. I thought at Crosspoint, we're not even allowed to wear ties, much less jackets, so that wasn't happening.
He does have great hair. All right, we'll get to the action in just a minute. We'll be back after this commercial break.
And I have a fresh fry. As I mean, the fruit cup.
Oh. Hey, how about
Pepsi Max, 0 calories.
And maximum taste.
Up. I want to welcome you both to the teach-off. We're going to start with talking about what it's going to take to win today. We talk about focus. Keep yourselves focused. Keep your teams focused. Keep moving forward, okay? You have a lot of distractions. That's why I'm talking about focus. You're going to have a lot of this. Okay?
All right.
A lot of this. Notice I was at you, Kurt. I'll be watching you.
I picked up on that.
I've been here the last 2 years. I know how you play. Lisa, one word of warning for you. The hair. Kurt likes to keep his hair a certain way.
If any of it,
yes, if his hair gets disheveled, look out. That's when the flags will start flying, I'm sure. So let's go ahead and move into our coin toss. Kurt, I'm going to let you call it, all right?
All right. Tails is what I always call.
Well, what do you know? It's heads. But anyway, Kurt's going to win, so you go ahead and start.
Yes, finally, I get the coin toss. Good luck,
coin toss.
I probably shouldn't get used to the whole winning thing.
No.
We are in store for a fantastic matchup today. Let's go down to the field.
Well, you know, just a word as we get going today on what we're really doing here today. You know, no matter what anybody's spiritual orientation is today, across America, we're all into one thing, right? We're into the Super Bowl. And so, you know, a few years ago, we thought, you know, when people come into the church setting, oftentimes they're a bit angry, maybe even a little bitter, cynical. You know, a number of things. We thought, you know, people just need to have fun. And so we have a lot of fun around here. But we said, you know, one day a year, we should put everything aside and do nothing but have fun. And so, is anybody having fun here so far today? Yeah. Well, I am glad, because I mean, that's what mainly what today is about. And yet at the same time, we believe in some unique way God meets us in this place. And so we want to pray to that end before we get do anything else. Let's do that. God, I'm praying right now that you would help us just to have fun in this place today. We're talking about a big subject. It's a big day here in Indianapolis. And you created us to laugh. You created us to laugh and share community with others. You created us for pleasure. And so today I'd ask that you would help us to experience those things. And at the same time, God, you created us with the capacity to learn and to grow. And so in some unique way, I ask that you'd meet us in this place that, you know, there's not many places in our culture we can go and we can actually speak openly and honestly about a topic such as this. And so we pray that you would help us to be articulate today in everything that we say and have some fun along the way. Pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, you know, we're beginning a new series today, as Eric shared, called Collision, where sexuality and spirituality kind of intersect, where they collide. And let me just tell you what we're going to do. You know, I'm going to speak today, Lisa's going to speak today, as if we're sitting on our back patio, because, you know, we're going to try to be as open and honest and authentic as possible. That's why today is a PG-13 Sunday. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we're not doing anyone any favors in terms of being helpful to speak what is real when we tiptoe around issues such as sexuality. I mean, it's a really, really big issue. And so, you know, every day there's a steady stream of media that comes at you from all directions. I mean, if you're standing in the grocery line at Marsh or Kroger, you stand and you turn and look at the magazines there. I mean, they're plastered with sexual messages to you. And, you know, you go into any Barnes & Noble, because borders closed, right? Go into any Barnes & Noble and you stand in the magazine area, you're going to be faced with all kinds of messages that come at you. You know, later on today, I mean, the Super Bowl is about what? It's about sex first and football second, right? I mean, you're going to be plastered all evening with commercials, with media. In fact, Madonna at halftime today. I mean, you know, everything is geared towards sexuality. And so we're constantly faced with this stream of media that comes our way. And what happens is this entire cultural milieu, it just happens around us. And sometimes we just have to stop and ask ourselves, you know, what is this saying to me? What's going on here? And we have to say, you know, what does God think about this? You know, what do I think about this, if we're really honest? And so one of the first things I want to say today, just right off the bat, kind of the first big idea, is that God is very, very pro-sex. God loves sex.
Touchdown, yes! Walters!
I knew it!
God loves sex. That was all right there.
Of all the obvious statements Kurt has ever made, I really, really appreciate that one. I don't know if we need to continue here or
no,
is there
good.
Anything else?
Let's go to the card.
Lisa, please proceed. Your ball's yours.
Yeah, absolutely. God is pro-sex. And speaking of that, I am playing injured today, and my voice kind of sounds like a 1-900 number, so just it all works today. Here we go. You know, the reality is that God is really pro-sex, but the other thing is that we have really tended to focus on our sexuality in just the context of the physical. And many times this leads to a compartmentalizing of our sexuality that is never the way that it was intended or the way that it was designed. C.S. Lewis is one of my favorite authors, and he says a lot of things about sex in a really healthy way. And we're going to start off with a quote from him, so we're going to put this up on the screen. And he's talking about the context of, if you're physically engaging in sexuality in a casual way, outside of the confines of God's design, then these are some of the things that we need to be aware of. When we indulge in this, we are trying to isolate one kind of union, the sexual, from all other kinds of union which were intended to go along with it, and make up the total union. There's nothing wrong with sexual pleasure any more than the pleasure of eating. It means that you must not isolate that pleasure and try to get it by itself any more than you ought to try to get the pleasure of taste without swallowing and digesting, without chewing things and spitting them out again. In other words, you're not going to have the entirety of what it was intended for, unless you have the full experience. So he's starting to talk about is this compartmentalizing. Our society is always doing this to us, like Kurt was referring to. It's always putting things out there saying, well, this is the part you need to focus on, and this is what, you know, is the most wonderful thing. And something that we're focusing a lot now at the university is some issues around pornography. And we know statistically that girls and little boys between the ages of 7 and 9 are being exposed to this just because of the access to the internet. And porn is brilliant in that it is focusing on what is a way that we can have one-dimensional sex without all these other types of things influencing us. And that tends to be the hook. And what we find many times is that there's not the satisfaction afterwards. A friend of mine who's a neuro-micro-biologist, just did a study that was really interesting, and here's some things he found out. Much of any things that we struggle with that can become an addiction can be subconscious. We know that. We feel stressed or anxious. This results in the release of stress hormones. Our brains monitor that imbalance and try to compensate by preparing the body for stress-relieving activities. Makes sense. This generates, then, a subconscious drive to do things we know will relax us. The problem is that when we overstimulate the stress-relieving senses, our brain sees this as an imbalance and releases stress-inducing factors to maintain the balance, and thus that addiction cycle starts. Lewis, again, described it as an ever-increasing craving for an ever-diminishing pleasure. Let me say that again. An ever-increasing craving for an ever-diminishing pleasure. Now, if we can understand how we're wired, we can use that to our advantage. With regards to struggles with something like an addiction, there's been some really cool work done recently showing that what we are looking at when we actually climax or orgasm, we will naturally associate with feelings of euphoria. The results are striking then. If a couple engages in a monogamous relationship for many years, the neurons will imprint, and they become so powerful that the partner's face will evoke feelings of love time after time. Even after, you know, physical beauty diminishes over time, just their face will evoke those feelings of love. If a person is viewing pornography with faces changing each time, the associations will be based more on novelty. This means a cycle where the person increasingly needs more shock value to maintain the same stimulation, the same effect. And we understand that. But to realize that we are so explicitly designed in a way that it's so complete, it's so integrated in the way we connect with others. You know, Rob Bell has a great video out, and there's been a lot of controversy about Rob, but this is a really cool video, and it's called Flame. And it highlights the three types of love that are highlighted in Song of Songs, and my opponent is going to be talking about that in a minute. And the three types of love are specific. There's Raya, and that means companion or friend. There's Ahava, meaning love or a choice to join your life with someone. And then finally, there's Dode. And Dode means to arouse, to rock, to fondle. Enough said.
Touchdown. That's okay.
Well, you know, I think Lisa makes a really good point right there, because, you know, she's the professor after all. So, you know, we like to compartmentalize our sexuality, don't we? We like to think, man, this is just the physical. It doesn't affect me in any other way. In fact, this is why I think the Bible talks about it so frequently. In our culture, sex is such a big, big thing. We joke about it. It's in nearly every movie that we see, TV shows. At least every other song is written in some way about sexuality. But we often don't see the story behind the story. I mean, we experience sex in sound bites, and so we rarely see what's going on underneath the covers you know, behind the curtain, behind the closed door. We really see what happens behind the scenes and what it really does to a person's heart. As Lisa just talked about, this is groundbreaking research that's being done as we talk about imprinting on our minds. And so, you know, we often don't also think about what it does to God's heart. I mean, what happens when God views sex not as making love, but literally as this slight mirror of His love for us? And so I want us to take a look for a few moments at the story behind the story. And so we get a piece of this in Genesis, the first book of the Bible. Genesis, if you have a Bible, you can turn there with us. These words are going to be on the screen here as well. And we find this is where Adam and Eve kind of come onto the scene. I mean, this is where you and I, our story begins. All the way back at the beginning of creation, they were the first created people. And they have this first ever great sexual relationship. I mean, this is how God created them. This is how the world, the earth, begins to get populated. And the plan for them is to be together forever. That this is kind of a once, and they're connected for the rest of their human lives together. And here's what Adam says right here. Take a look. It says, "The man said, 'Now this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, and she shall be called'"
Wait for
whoa,
it.
Whoa, man.
Wait for it. You threw this at our wedding. Every year, Eric.
Yeah, he's consistent, if not predictable.
Just in case you wondered how a woman got her name. Maybe Adam stood back. He's like, whoa, man. I mean, it's classic, right? It's classic.
Never gets old.
"For she was taken out of man. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife. And they become one flesh. Adam and his wife were both naked and they felt no shame." And so they were naked. They were totally open, totally vulnerable. Chris is right. I mean, at every wedding that I do, I don't know if I do the whoa man, but I'll talk about the vulnerability that's created when a husband and wife, when a man and a woman come together and enter this relationship. There's this sense that they're totally naked. And it's not just a physical thing. I mean, it's a relational thing. It's a mental thing. It's an emotional nakedness. It's nakedness in every sense of the word. It's this idea that there's no cold shoulder between them. There's no strife going on. There's no turning the other way, away from my partner. It's this sense that everything in my life is completely transparent and I'm vulnerable with the one whom I'm joining my life with. I mean, this is saying in a beautiful way as we see this gift of sexuality that God gives us. In fact, sex is a gift. What is sex anyway? We have to kind of get to what does that really mean? Well, sex is when two people come together in God's eyes and you're no longer two individuals, but you're one person. I mean, it's this idea of literally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, in every aspect of the word being one flesh, kind of like this duct tape right here. Now, this is actually Gorilla Tape. Anybody a fan of Gorilla Tape? Gorilla Tape is it will pull your fingerprints off your fingers. All right, I mean, it's very adhesive. But this is a great picture of if we think of two lives and if sex or sexuality is intended to be an adhering agent, that when someone chooses to join their life with one another. And the adhesion begins. I mean, there's a complete oneness. There's a complete joining. There's a merging where this becomes, in a sense, one item. Emotionally, physically, mentally, relationally, spiritually. And this kind of mirrors what happens, what God intends for us to experience. And there's something fascinating about this. I don't know if I can even do this, but you know, whenever that relationship then breaks, it's one, incredibly painful. Incredibly painful. And then there's a part of the other person that always goes with us. And there's just a few things, you know, we have to think about when it comes to this. I mean, how I think about sex is different than any other created being. I mean, have you ever wondered that? I mean, God said, you know, I created you in the image of God, male and female in the image of God, Genesis 1:27. And that means you and I have something in common with God that no other being has in the entire animal kingdom. I mean, think about this for a moment. I mean, you know, as you think to yourself, as you process like animal sex videos, I mean, not that like you're watching them on a regular basis or anything, but you know, think about it. I mean, you've watched like Animal Planet, right? You watch Animal Planet, National Geographic. You've watched, you know, the mating habits of gorillas or whatever it might be. I mean, as you think about this, you know, you probably can't identify two other beings in all of creation that have sex eyeball to eyeball. I mean, actually, you know, eyeball to eyeball, facing one another, you know, looking into the deepest part of one another's beings, into our soul. I mean, what is it about us that God's man has set you apart? You're going to be able to look into the eyeballs, into the soul of your partner. I mean, what a gift that God has given us on this. I mean, what is it about us? I mean, as I think about you know, growing up, I think the first sexual encounter I saw were two dogs out on the lawn, right? And, you know, I don't know what that is. You're going to talk about that in a few moments. But, you know, I also remember waking up one morning, you know, sometime when I was living at home. My window, it was a spring morning. My window was cracked a bit. I was on a second floor of our home, second story of our home. And I remember just hearing this god-awful screeching coming out from underneath my window, which happened to be two cats in the process of intercourse. And you know, I don't know if you've ever heard cats, procreate. It's very, very painful for them. In fact, it's painful because the ribs on the cat's penis actually face backwards. It's a fact. It's a fact. Okay, you can validate it.
Illegal procedure. Talking about cat genitalia in church. Sorry, it's not allowed.
Hey, Kurt, it's actually barbs.
Barbs are worse than ribs. Yeah,
yeah,
barbs
sorry.
Are worse.
We're going to keep the game moving on. Lisa, the ball's yours.
Really, anything that involves barbs should be outlawed, especially that on a cat. It is kind of frightening. But the reality is that we were intended for pleasure, and like he was saying, we are the only species that were designed to copulate face to face. And another really interesting thing is that of all the species, the female species is the only one that has a clitoris, and the clitoris only designed is for sexual pleasure. Now the penis, multi-purpose, you can do all kinds of things with it, but the clitoris is only for sexual pleasure. So I think God was pretty intentional about saying, hey, this is a good thing here. And if you realize the face-to-face connection that we're designed for, and you're right, we are the only species except for dolphins and seahorses, and I don't know what that's about. They copulate face to face as well. I think God's just messing with us. But to be able to see the other person's eyes, you know, is really important. And the other reality is in that position, what we call the missionary position, and remember that particular position came from natives in other countries looking, peeking in the hut of the missionaries while they were doing things, and it became the missionary position. So in that position is how the clitoris can be most easily stimulated. So there's something that's really happening there, you know, that's a cool design about who we are and how we were intended. There's a design of intimacy that's very inherent in the way that we can mate. And we have to remember, like Kurt was saying, and like I was referring to with the research, that there really is this imprinting that's taking place, and that imprinting ties in so cool.
Touchdown!
Eric, that signals the end of the first half. The score is 2-1 in favor of Lisa. Time to use some of my favorite cliches here as we
roll them out.
A little bit of time. They're going to have to play 60 minutes.
Yes.
Hear that one an awful lot. This is cross point, so more like 70 or 75, given what the topic is that week. It has all come down to this. Most importantly, it's a marathon and not a sprint. Plus, as we all know, anything can happen on any given Sunday.
You will need to pace yourself. We still have a whole other second half to go on this. Hey, by the way, Chris, have you ever seen the musical Cats?
I have not.
I don't want to see it now. After
no interest
today.
At all.
That's not it. Hey, we have a fantastic second half ready to come up, and we have a fantastic halftime show coming up. We'll get to it right after this message.
Oh, dude, your car.
Oh, that's okay. Here, watch this. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Oh, hey.
Whoa.
Who's that guy?
That's my agent, Rich.
Can I try?
Yeah, go for it.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
With a hot guy.
What's up?
This could work.
Who's also sensitive?
He's a rescuer.
But has a dark side.
Yo.
Hello.
Hey, dark side. Put your feet off the car.
So typical of advertising today, men just being treated like meat, objectified.
Come on.
Just makes me sick. Makes me sick.
Just come with me. She wants both of us.
I'm not going over there.
Look at me. One, we're a salty sweet snack. Two, salty sweet snacks get eaten. And three, I prefer her versus hungry eyes over here.
Salty, sweet, and impossible to resist.
Somebody get this guy a bowl of nuts or something, please.
Welcome back. We'll get to the second half of action here in just a minute. We need to mention that halftime today, nice shot by the Crosspoint Band. Halftime today brought to you by PJ Tal, who picks the best guitar songs when apparently I'm not available to play.
I wouldn't take it too personally.
Nothing personal, huh?
Sure, it's just a coincidence. Yeah. Hey, before we get back onto the field, we've got some great things coming up here in the next few weeks here at Crosspoint. Next week, the Collision Series continues. Same subject matter, so bring your parents. It'll be fun. Just sit right next to them and be awkward and blush together.
The awkwardness through the
yes,
family.
That'll be great. Hey, a few different ways that you can, which you can connect here at Crosspoint. One is Life Together groups. We believe that the Crosspoint experience extends beyond just 1 hour a week here in this auditorium, but really coming together in community with other people here from Crosspoint. If you've never been part of a Life Together group, we are restarting them this week. Awesome opportunity for you to get involved. At the back of the auditorium, you'll find a table with all the different groups listed. You can check them out. Write your name down if you're interested in joining one. You can also go online, and you can also just mark on your connection card that you're interested in joining a Life Together group. Coming up on March 4th is something we call Explore Crosspoint. If you're newer to the Crosspoint community, this is a great opportunity for you to come and just find out why and how Crosspoint ticks. If you've got any questions, it's a great opportunity for you to ask those there as well. Lunch is provided. It's going to be less than an hour or hour-ish or so, and child care is provided as well. And just a reminder for the end of the service, we've got something in the back. It's called the Joy Box. And that's a place for people who choose to financially fuel what goes on here at Crosspoint with their tithes, their offerings, their crazy gift campaigns. You can drop that in there. If you're a guest with us this morning, the only thing that we ask you to drop in that box is your connection card that we referred to earlier this morning.
Thanks for that, Eric. A lot of exciting things coming up. Let's go back down to the field and the Crosspoint version of Ed Hockley. Dave Gaze.
We're going to start the second half. Kurt, the ball is going to be yours. One second real quick. You know, I forgot to mention early when we started the game that I wanted you to keep it clean, the whole cat thing. I'm watching you. All right. Clean it up. Get us out of the gutter.
All right. Well, you know, in that tone, I can only imagine that as we begin the second half that there are probably at least two dominant thoughts that are going on right now in this room. There's some of you are going, great, here we go again, 4 weeks of a sex series, can endure this. And then there's probably others of us that are saying, oh, man, why doesn't the church talk about this more often? I could do an eight-week series, you know? And so I realize, you know, we're in all different places on this, and yet what we're exploring is the question of, you know, what's the big deal when it comes to our sexuality? And we're kind of asking that question. What we're finding is it's a really big deal. God cares about our sexuality. He created it. Sexuality and spirituality actually do intersect. And so, you know, sex is a big deal because it comes from God. I mean, that's one of the big things that we really want to capture throughout this morning. And, you know, when we approach sex as strictly physical, as we've been talking through this morning, we tend to bruise ourselves. I mean, we tend to bruise ourselves. We tend to bruise other people as well. Because it's not intended to be used that way. And so, you know, one of the things we have to do is we have to go back to the original inventor, the designer, the creator for sexuality. And if we're not following kind of the manual per se, then we're probably bruising ourselves quite frequently. And so I want to take a look at the manual, the designer, whatever you want to call it. I mean, if God designed us and God designed sexuality, then He had an intention for how it was meant to be lived. And so take, for instance, Song of Songs. We're going to take a look at this, chapter 5. And let me just say, if you've never read Song of Songs, it's this beautiful picture of a sexual encounter. I mean, it's this beautiful, loving, caring picture that includes sex as a part of this experience. It's kind of like a dream sequence. You know when you dream, it's kind of like you're dreaming and it doesn't always make a lot of sense. I mean, you're kind of like, you know, what does like a guitar and spray and wash and a coffee cup have in common, right? You're like, what is that? And then all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, oh, it all makes sense, you know? And so yeah, that's kind of what this is like. And so Song of Songs, there's these characters and they kind of come in and out of the scene. And so it's this beautiful picture of this physical relationship that's also emotional and relational and mental and spiritual. I mean, it's all integrated into one. And we see this beautiful picture of a healthy sexual relationship. Take a look. Verse 1 in chapter 5. It says, I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I've gathered my myrrh with spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I've drunk my wine and my milk. Now, there's a lot of poetic devices being used right here. I mean, things that are equating, things we can do with our body, you know, things we can do sexually. I mean, you can use your imagination as you read this. The cool thing is you don't have to use your imagination, right? I mean, it's kind of all laid out right there. I mean, you can very clearly get a picture of what the writer's talking about right here. And then all of a sudden, another character kind of emerges on the scene. The second part of verse 1 says, eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers.
And so God emerges on the scene. He's like, oh, way to go. Bravo. And you guys, this is exactly what I created you for. Drink it up. I mean, enjoy this. This is exactly what I intended for you. And some of you are going, oh, God didn't really say that. He did. It's right there. Can we put that back up? That's straight out of the scriptures right there, all right? I mean, in the right context, God is saying, this is my design for your sexuality. And so, it goes on. I mean, take a look at verse 4 right here and following. My lover thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my lover. My hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the lock. I don't know if you remember Sigmund Freud. Anybody remember Sigmund Freud as somebody who was, known for kind of saying, oh, this actually means that. And, I remember hearing a story about him being at a party and he ran into one of his buddies. His buddy saw him smoking a cigar and he went up to him. He's like, oh, Mr. Freud, what's up with the cigar? What's up with that? And Sigmund just says, well, my friend, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Sometimes a lock is just a lock. Sometimes a lock is something else. And so right here we see that he's talking about locks. He's talking about, openings. He's talking about things flowing. He's talking about...
Kurt, illegal player downfield.
What's that mean? What's that mean? What's that mean?
You were crossing the line. You were getting close. Yeah. I mean, you were right there.
It's just an exploit. I'm just breaking out the scripture, dude.
It's an interesting penalty. All I'm saying, let's look at this. That's the first Freud reference I've heard in 5 years from you. Last week it was Carl Jung.
It was Carl Jung. Carl Jung. Jung.
Good job on the pronunciation. I think it's Lisa's ball.
All right. And I think really what the official is saying right now is that Kurt is not qualified to make this point.
As tough as that may be to swallow.
All right. Lisa, your ball.
Yeah, Freud did say sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And sometimes it's not. And I think the Song of Songs really starts to highlight this very explicit understanding that we are wired for this physical enjoyment of sex. We're not only wired for that, God said it's really good, exactly as Kurt said. Now, if you look at different passages throughout the Song of Songs, you notice that every time the man is describing the woman's physical beauty, and they both describe the other's physical beauty. The man starts from the feet up, the sandals specifically, from the feet up. And the woman starts from the eyes and the hair down. And so there's this complementary wiring, I think, that's within us of how we enjoy and how we see one another. Now, the interesting thing about the Song of Songs is that it's considered wisdom literature in the Bible, and it's housed in that place in the Bible. And it also is considered a book of poetry. And if you look back into ancient Egyptian poetry, the wording and the metaphors and everything are very similar. So it's historically accurate in the way they were using the language. The other thing about the Song of Songs, I teach several classes, but I use this in two of my classes. One is the freshman seminar class, and the other is the senior human sexuality class. And I have the students read it out loud, and the women read it in the beloved's voice, and the guys read it in the lover's voice. Then they're saying these things to their classmates. And of course, the freshmen are a little, wigged out by it. But by the time we get to the senior year, they have learned, and these guys have got it down. They know if they, read it in such a way that's romantic and alluring, they might be getting some phone numbers afterwards. So it's been pretty funny to watch kids embrace this. But there is something very beautiful about God saying, "You are intended to enjoy one another. You're intended to observe these things about each other physically." So why would he be encouraging us in that way if it wasn't helpful? And when we understand the bounds of commitment and trust and safety and why that is tied in like that, we understand a couple of things. Now, regarding the sexual peak of the of males and females, men tend to peak in their late teens into their early mid-20s. Women tend to...
We have a challenge.
Another challenge.
I mean, everything she said I could have done. I mean, that's nothing that takes a professor right there.
After further review, the ruling on the field stands.
But you didn't review it. You got to go back.
Doesn't really need
no,
to.
No.
Kurt, your qualifications at this point are male.
Yeah. First of all, Kurt,
professor.
I'm taking this away. You can't have this back. Okay. The reality is I really like what Lisa has to say.
I'm noticing that.
I've been taking notes about the pomegranates and the locks and unlocking the locks and all.
Yeah, and I never see you taking notes out here.
Exactly. I've got some good stuff. So Lisa, please continue. Okay.
Okay, so with men peaking earlier, and women tend to peak in their late 30s and into their 40s. So you should be asking yourself, is God a masochist? I mean, really, what is this about? And if you think about it, women in their 20s, early 30s, are really focused on child rearing. You know, and that's a really good place for their energy to be directed. Men later on are focused on careers, you know, in their careers. So think through this. While a woman's energy is focused somewhere else, a man is pursuing. Why a man's focus, energy might be somewhere else, a woman is pursuing. And I think there's something pretty cool there about God's intentionality in designing us, that there's someone pursuing over the longevity of a marriage. There's someone saying, hey, I'm not a wallflower over here. You know, I really want to be with you. I want to connect here. Reminding us, oh yeah, this union's important. You know, we need to make time for this. I find that to be really encouraging. The other thing we know statistically is that women in healthy marriages are more orgasmic. They tend to perform more. They tend to be more free in that area. Now, thinking about this, you recognize that in order for a woman to orgasm, in order for that stimulation to take place, it really requires physical positioning that requires a lot of vulnerability on her part. And when we think about these issues of vulnerability, we start to get back to some really pretty important core things. Let's take a look at a scripture here, and I'm going to read this, and then we're going to break this down a little bit further for a minute. It goes back to Genesis. There's something that takes place that happened in the garden in the fall. It's kind of the core of our woundedness. And the cool thing is that the core of our healing also takes us back to the garden, can also be at the core of some elements that happen in sexual union with this. Now think about the sexual arousal cycle for a minute, okay? Try to get this metaphor in your mind, okay? Women are pretty much like crockpots when we come to the full cycle. All right, it pretty much starts in the morning and it might end by the evening, maybe, maybe not. Men are kind of like microwaves, right? When it comes, you know, as far as, I'm sorry, that was a big foul. When it comes to the completion. So you recognize the difference, okay? Again, you should be going, Wow, this is really, why would God do this? Okay, so let's look at the scripture. So he told the woman, I'll multiply your pains in childbirth. You'll give birth to your babies in pain. You'll want to please your husband, but he'll lord it over you. Keep that in your mind. You'll want to please your husband. Okay, go to the next. He told the man, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from, don't eat from this tree. The very ground is cursed because of you. Getting food from the ground will be as painful as having babies is for your wife. You'll be working in pain all your life long. In other words, for a man, he will toil the soil and not be able to be enough. There's issues with competence and performance that are real core here in the curse. With the woman, he's saying, you will want to please your husband, but it's not going to work out right. And some interpretations talk about pleasing as also being a part of controlling. It's not going to work out right the way that the responses take place. Now, keep in mind earlier in the scripture, Adam was not on the back 40 when Eve was eating the apple, okay? Adam was off to the side. There's a whole study called The Silence of Adam. He was off to the side, and he's pretty much watching what's going down. Okay, she's eating the apple here. Is she going to make it? Is she going to make it? If she doesn't make it, then I'm not going to eat it. But if she makes it, I think I'll have a bite. So, you know, that whole thing about it being Eve's fault, Okay. All right? So recognize that they're both a part of this. The fall was about both people. So as women have to realize the safety that's required for them to experience orgasm, they have to use their words. They have to be vulnerable. They have to not hurry in order to keep him happy. They have to deal with their fear of abandonment. Because if I don't please him, he might leave. Adam was silent. He might leave. But they have to go back to those core fears. Men, remember the cycle. Men have to be patient. They have to slow down. They have to recognize that wherever she's at, it's not about their performance, doing it right or wrong. It's about what's happening in the beauty of the communication and the intimacy that's between them. So the wounds that happened in the garden have this beautiful possibility of being restored in what happens in the sexual union, which I think is a pretty cool way.
And you know, as we think about this, we've talked about the garden a couple of places. In fact, Song of Songs refers to the garden. I mean, the first verse of chapter 5 is talking about my garden. And you know, and this is really interesting because it comes down to one of those realities that, as I look over this auditorium, as I've been sitting and listening, taking notes as well, there's a lot of gardens sitting in here today. I mean, every one of us have a garden. And for some of us, you know, when we think about our sexual garden, I mean, there's beautiful things growing up in this garden. And for others of us, you know, we're sitting here and thinking, man, you know, there's a lot of thorny things emerging in the soil that are choking out the beauty in my garden. And what a great connect. This whole idea that the fall, what we actually lost in the garden, has the potential to be restored in the garden of this intimacy, this connection, this relationship that literally mirrors the kind of love that God has for us. And you know, sometimes we think, man, you know, if God comes into my life, then God just like, boom, plants a piece of sod right there and it's growing, or boom, like a rose bush right there. But we know that's not how a garden works, right? I mean, if you've ever gardened, you realize it takes years and years of cultivating a garden. I mean, it takes years and years of putting fertilizer in the right place to over the long haul grow something into something of beauty. It takes years and years of pulling the stubborn weeds that begin to entangle and take over. It takes years and years of cultivating. And every one of us is a garden. Every one of us, for as long as you've been alive, your life is a garden, including your sexuality. And it continues to be cultivated. And what's fascinating is if we don't see this, you know, if you don't take the intentionality to put the garden in its right place, then your garden's going to automatically be in the wrong place.
I think Kurt's making an excellent point right here. That is, I think when it comes to our sexuality, it's so much more than just a physical thing. It's really something that encompasses our entire lives as human beings. And Chris, I think this might be a great time for everybody to pull out their connection cards that we had you take out earlier. If you look on the back of that, here at CrossPoint, we just don't want you to leave it right here today, all the different things we're discussing, but we want to give you an opportunity to take just another step forward. And so as you look on the back of this card and you examine the number of different opportunities, steps, if you will, to take, you know, maybe for you, it's just saying, where I'm at right now, I can agree to come back the next 3 weeks of this collision series. That's where I'm at today. For others, it might just be having a real frank conversation with God of just saying, God, this is where my sexuality has been. I'm lining that up against what you have to say and what your word has to say, and wrestling with that. And for others, if you're married today, maybe it's just having a frank conversation, an open conversation, talking about trust and security and vulnerability. So we just encourage you over this next moment or so just to take some time and choose your next step and fill out that card.
You know, kind of wrapping this up, here's the best thing about everything we're talking about. We talked about the union, and that's really important. But that union is really beautiful when each individual person understands that with or without another person, they are 100% complete because of who Christ is in them. And when you recognize that you're complete, and I'm sorry the Jerry Maguire thing doesn't fly, when you recognize that you are complete without somebody else, then you move into relationships out of your fullness and not out of your neediness. And then those relationships are healthier than they ever could have been because you understand how redemption took place. You understand that whatever fell apart in the garden was made new to us by the gift of the cross.
Touchdown, Lisa.
We have it. Score now 3-1 in favor of Lisa. Eric, I feel comfortable if you do.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I have to say, though, I mean, I walked it, like, to the 3 for her, and she just carried across the line. You gave her a touchdown. I mean, I'm not sure what's up with that. Are you still favoring her? Or?
Kurt, there's closures in baseball. That's all I have to say.
I just lost the game, Kurt.
All right. Looks like we have a winner and some controversy here today, Chris.
Never without drama.
Winner of the third annual teach-off, Lisa.